Big, big, big shout out to the name Ivor. They want to put a walnut where?
I do like the simplicity of a huge ass.
How'd you mind me now?
Hello, and welcome to How Do You Like Me Now, the podcast where we go back and relive the golden years of kids' TV. I'm Will, with me as always is Liz. Hello, Liz.
Das vedanya, comrade. My voice is very low.
You sound very low. Like,
just in case this is the first time that people are tuning in, this isn't how I sound usually.
No, this is not how either of us normally sound. Because I'm quite croaky at the moment. I think it's important to stress, we've both got a bug.
It's not the bug.
We haven't got the Rona.
No.
We've been tested extensively. We don't have the Rona. But, you know, we are both a bit under the weather. But
other colds and viruses are available.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're not going to let that stop us from recording an episode for the good people.
No, we wouldn't let that stop us.
Absolutely not. So here we are. We're back, and we have a winner from our last pitch battle.
This is what I needed. I needed this pick-me-up. I was getting slammed.
You were. And there's no beating around the bush. Paddington trounced Rupert.
That's what I expected to happen.
It wasn't a whitewash. I want to make that clear. There were some votes for Rupert out there.
Those people need to have a word with themselves.
But the presiding view is... Rupert's a twat in a scarf.
Yes.
And Paddington's much better.
Paddington's awesome. What's not to like?
Well, there we are. So that's what we've done. This week we've gone away and we watched two episodes of Paddington. Liz, do you want to tell people about the episodes we watched?
Yeah, all right. I know how to do it. So we watched the Paddington series, which is from the one that ran from 76 to 80. So... I put it to you that he had a black hat when we did the pitch battle, and I was correct.
You were.
Paddington's look has now become the red hat, blue duffel coat, but there are different versions of him around there.
Right.
So, and I also put out there as a thing that I thought Jeremy Clarkson's mother invented him.
You did say that, yes.
And I'm completely correct.
Oh, wow, okay.
So Jeremy Clarkson's mum... Mm-hmm. Made a Paddington Bear toy for Jeremy Clarkson and his sister.
Right.
And then somehow started selling them in a shop or whatever. And Michael Bond, who wrote the Paddington books, saw one alone in the shop, only one left or whatever, and wrote these stories based on that. So the original Paddington was a toy made by Jeremy Clarkson's mum.
Well, that is incredible knowledge.
So there have been several versions of Paddington. Obviously, now they're making these, you know, movies that it's all CGI. But there have been, like, cartoons and whatever else. But this is a very particular kind of stop motion where Paddington is a little fluffy bear and everyone else is made of paper. And it's very unusual.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, me too. Because I don't think there's another version of that being done. And I don't know, it just looks so beautiful. Because I thought that the paper versions might have just been things they cut out of books. But it's not at all. It's very, very well done.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll get into it, but
yeah.
I think this version is really, I really enjoyed
it. There's some, not wishing to give spoilers, but there is something very special here. So shall we get into it then?
Yeah, the first episode we watched is Please Look After This Bear. So this is from 1976. So this predates us a little bit.
Yes.
But I think it was just one of those things that you just are aware of, Paddington, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this had that air of familiarity about it, so I'm sure I will have watched at some point. It must have been repeated.
Yeah.
So we're starting at the beginning. I mean, it's very sweet intro music.
Oh, the intro music, again, I absolutely love it. I don't think I could have sung it to you.
No.
But as soon as you hear it, it's like familiar. It's like you've, you know, remembered it all your life. But it started off, the music was a piece of incidental music for a BBC adaptation of Lord Peter Wimsey.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Lord Peter Wimsey?
No.
He's like a detective. There's like books.
Oh, right.
The like, Peter Wimsey like books.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, obviously at some point the BBC made a version of it. And this was just a piece of music that they wrote, you know, incidental music means it wasn't particularly important, but somebody must have gone, that's quite good, that.
Yeah, we'll keep that.
Keep that.
Yeah, no, it's a very sweet one. And then you get introduced to this world where everything is a paper cutout or is flat, except for Paddington, who is this bear.
Yeah.
And I love that, yeah, it emphasises the whole, well, this is an unusual situation because he's the only one that's actually 3D. It's an unusual situation anyway that a bear is now wandering around in a coat.
See, I think everybody knows this story, don't they, of the bear in the railway station.
Yep.
And he's got the coat with a little tag on it that says, please look after this bear.
Mm.
And it's supposed to evoke memories of, like, the children who were evacuated in World War II. So it's supposed to sort of tug on your heartstrings, this image of a bear. And, you know, he's come from Peru.
Yeah.
Darkest Peru. And it interests me that they just get you straight into it. They're just like, just accept all these facts. There's a bear here from Peru. He's already got a duffel coat on. Don't question it.
He's carrying a suitcase.
Yes, he's got a suitcase, but the only thing in it is marmalade.
Yeah.
He's definitely got a jar of marmalade. He's not stupid. He's packed a full jar.
But yeah, no, he's met by Mr. Brown. Well, Mr. Brown, rather, is going... Mr. and Mrs. Brown are going through the station and they spot this bear.
Yeah.
And as I think you would do if you were going through a major rail interchange and you spotted a bear, go, well, that's a bit weird, I'm going to go have a look at that.
Well, they seem to go and have a chat with him.
Yeah.
Which they're already expecting him to be able to talk.
Yes, which is a bit... I mean, yeah.
Don't question it.
Nope, don't question it. Just, yep. Yeah, he can talk and he explains he stowed away on a lifeboat.
Does he say lifeboat?
I think he says he stowed away in a
lifeboat.
Says
he's a stowaway.
Yeah. I've written lifeboat.
Interesting. It's quite a long journey for a lifeboat. Peru to Paddington.
Well, I don't think it was like solely non-stop in the lifeboat. I think probably he was on a bigger ship and hid in a lifeboat.
Right. Oh, okay.
But that begs the question why he's being picked up at Paddington Station and not, say, like, Portsmouth. Portsmouth Bear, also a good name.
Portsmouth Bear, though, I think I've just got a very different impression of what he'd be like.
I think Portsmouth Bear is, like, his more upmarket cousin who solves crimes.
Yes. A Lord Peter Wimsey character.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He's got quite a sad backstory as Paddington because he explains to them that he had to leave because his Aunt Lucy has gone into a home.
Yeah.
And she said to him that he should emigrate.
She said she always wanted to emigrate and she wants him to emigrate. Which, I mean, you could look at that, and I did for a second go, did she actually go into a home? Or did she just want to get rid of this freeloading, marmalade-scoffing bear she's been saddled with?
Well, what I also find interesting is that when they meet this bear, they decide, because they've found him at Paddington Station, to call him Paddington.
Mm.
But Aunt Lucy has a name.
Yeah.
Why didn't she name Paddington?
Well, why don't they ask Paddington what his... It's not like they say, what's your name? Well, I don't really have one. Everyone just calls me Bear. No, there's none of that. It's just like, oh, well, you'll need a name. We'll call you Paddington. Almost as if he's going to go, actually, my name is Roger. But they cut him off. They cut him off too quick. And they just go, nope, you're called Paddington now. That's it. That's what we're calling you.
Well, in another version that I saw, because I watched the trailers for the... I haven't seen the modern-day films, but I watched the trailers. They ask his name, and he just does a bear growl. And they're like, oh, we'll have to think of something different. They decide to name him Paddington because there's no way they could pronounce that.
Yes. Here it seems like, well, his English is exceptional.
But why would Aunt Lucy be called Lucy... And he's called...
True. And also the label doesn't say, please look after this bear, comma, Colin. It says, please look after this bear. Like, I haven't named him yet.
Yeah.
Just look after him. I mean, how old is Paddington meant to be?
I don't know. I sort of think of him as a child.
See, I do as well. The narration doesn't help in making him a child. Because it's Michael Hordern, isn't it, doing the narration?
Michael Hordern, yeah. And he's a great old actor.
Yeah.
Probably most people won't like instantly conjure up an image of him, but he's been in everything. Like, I think I looked him up on IMDb and he had like 200 credits. Wow. So any TV show or film that was British, you know, from the like 40s to the 80s, he's probably been in it.
Okay. Well, let's say that, I mean, it's a very, very rich, mellifluous voice he's got.
He's a great old, you know, proper Shakespearean trained actor.
And I think it's a fantastic job he does. The thing is, it does make Paddington seem older than I think potentially he's supposed to be.
Yes, I see what you're saying. Well, because they had this problem with the modern day film, didn't they? Because they cast Colin Firth and they had Colin Firth record Paddington's lines, but also they were recording his facial expressions because they were going to use them to inform the CGI, right?
Oh, right.
And then they decided they didn't like Colin Firth as Paddington because it made him seem, it just didn't work with him having the voice of a very, you know, adult male.
Mm.
So they chose a different adult male who has a child's voice, which
is Ben Whishaw.
Ben Whishaw, yeah.
I think that's the thing. It is. I can see why you go. You know, you want like distinguishedness. It's not a word in a bear in its voice if you're doing that. But yeah, you don't want him to sing too old because he's got to get into hijinks and scrapes.
That's the thing with Paddington. He's all about the hijinks, isn't he?
Yes, yes, he is.
Because as soon as they've met him, the Mr. and Mrs. Brown. You know, Mrs. Brown, I think, is more soft on him, isn't she? She is, wants to look after him, really.
Yeah, she does.
But they decide to take him to the cafe at the railway.
Well, yeah, Mr. Brown has to take him to the buffet.
Which was
Michael Horden's pronunciation, which I love. The buffet. Paddington had never seen a buffet before. And while Mrs. Brown, I think, goes off to collect their daughter.
Yes.
Because that's where they come to Paddington to pick up their daughter. And so we get this scene where where Paddington is very happy with the buffet because he gets sticky buns and tea.
Yes, there's sticky buns everywhere. He's smothered in cream.
Yes, he is. And then people are very upset and he goes, no, it's all right, don't worry, I'll take care of it. Starts shoveling buns into his hat. And at that point I was like, I'm on board with this guy. If you're getting buns that good, you need to sneak them out, hide them in a hat.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just love that little scene as well. And it is like the joy of stop motion that you can just like take cream and have it expand to a ridiculous degree. So you've got from what looks like just a small bit of cotton wool, suddenly he's entirely covered in shaving foam.
I enjoyed that as well. I just think it's so quaint all the way that this is done.
Mm.
You know, stuff that he has to interact with is like 3D, but everything else is just paper cutouts. And it's very cute. Very cute. So, yeah, we have this with the buns. But then they're worried. I think the mum and the daughter turn up. And the daughter says, what will the taxi driver say? Because obviously they need to get a taxi home from Paddington because they've got a bear now. And what the taxi driver does say is my favourite part of this. It's a very short episode. We're almost done.
Yeah.
But the taxi driver bit is my favourite because the taxi driver isn't happy about Paddington being so dirty. He says, bears is sixpence extra, sticky bears, ninepence.
Now, is that ninepence on top of the sixpence? Or is that...
No, I don't think he's trying to pull a fast one. So I think a sticky bear is ninepence. But I like the idea that he's got like a little list up.
He's got a rate going for it already.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought this is two kids' TV shows we've covered on The Bounce, where we've had taxi drivers charging sixpence.
Yes.
So that's a fixed rate, just sixpence for the bear. He's sticky, ninepence.
Sixpence for the bear? Is that a band?
Sixpence none the richer, you're thinking. But sixpence for the bear, I think, might have been one of the early names they considered.
That was on the list. Could have been.
Because they were a Paddington tribute band at the start.
They were a Paddington tribute band, okay.
Yeah. See, I like this whole, even though this is like it is very short, I like the whole bit in the train station because it does bring that sort of evocative of a different age when, yes, you'd have a little buffet on, you know, a little sort of tea room on the station platform to go and have a sticky bun and a cup of tea rather than like a Wetherspoons or a Burger King surrounded by pigeons as it is now.
Well, it does. It all seems very quaint and very sort of like, I don't know, like a Agatha Christie novel or something. Because what I remember of the calf on the train station is going in there depressed because my train was delayed and I was going to be late for work again, and buying like a chocolate muffin thinking it would cheer me up, and then just realizing that it was old and stale and yet shoveling it into my face anyway.
And it cost about £4.50.
Cost about £4.50. The cold wind of the station is whipping me, and the chocolate's just going in, and I'm thinking, I don't need these calories. They're not worth it. This is so stale. And yeah, I continue to shovel chocolate muffin in my sad, sad face, which is why I don't commute anymore. Did you like when the taxi driver... So taxi driver says this about, you know, sticky bears, ninepence, muddy dogs, you know, threepence, and he's got the whole list. He's got the list there, you know, arrogant fish.
Well, we all know how you transport an arrogant fish.
How's that?
Well,
in a bucket.
In a bucket. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right.
That's a throwback to Wizardora.
That's a throwback to Wizardora. What happens? See, now, I think you could easily have a story in which Paddington's a lovely, cuddly little bear and he doesn't know how to do things properly, which is why he gets into mischief and makes mess and whatever else. And there is that, but he is also a savage. Yep. And I don't mean like a savage bear. I mean, as in the way the kids say it now.
Yes, I know.
He's a savage.
Yes, I agree.
Because when the taxi driver says this, the taxi driver just goes back to looking forward like, I've told him. And Paddington decides to stare him down.
Yeah.
He gives him a stare, which is difficult for them to do because the puppet is a fixed puppet and doesn't have different expressions. And yet they do it really well, because I felt the cold glow of those black beads in mm-hmm. the front of his face. And it makes the taxi driver blush, which they achieve by shining a red light on him because he's a piece of paper. And I don't know if they didn't have a second piece of paper with a blush on it, but they shine a red light on him instead. I really like that.
I thought it was great. I love as well that... So that this happens, and then the Browns pull a David Cameron, in that they forget their daughter, who they came to the station for, and the taxi has to reverse so they can pick up their daughter.
Oh, I thought they forgot their daughter and Paddington.
No, Paddington's in the taxi. So they've gone and got Paddington in the thing, and then they forget their daughter.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Which is incredibly savage. I mean, the daughter's not even named. They don't even say, we've come to pick up our daughter, whatever her name is. You know, it's like, oh, we're here to pick up a daughter. Ooh, a bear. And then get distracted by the bear.
They are very distracted by the bear, which I understand because I think I've said it before on this podcast. I like animals better than people.
Yeah.
And definitely better than children. So I can totally understand that you're wandering through a train station, you've got to pick up your bloody kid who's on a day trip, is going to yabber on about it, and instead you see a lovely cuddly bear and you're like, ooh.
All he wants in life is a sticky bun and something to put his marmalade in.
Actually, I think Paddington's a lot of work. That's the entire premise, actually, is that he's going to be a lot of trouble.
Yeah, no, definitely. But this is a really lovely setup for a series. And I mean, I just love the style of it. I love the way it's put together. All the paper cutouts, all the people. I just think, I just thought it was fantastic. I love this top to bottom.
Yeah, me too. The second episode is from the second series. So there are only, I think, two series of this.
Right.
Separated by a couple of years. And then they did some specials. And obviously some of them are based on books that Michael Bond wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because it's a TV show, they have to, I don't know, expand a bit. This one, I think, this second episode that we watched, I'm going to guess it's not based on a book. No, it is based on a book. Almost all of them are, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
They're, you know, separated out, but almost all of them. So this one is, it's called Keeping Fit.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with, one day, Paddington decided to take up bodybuilding.
It's a great opener.
What a premise. What a premise. One day, Paddington decided to take up bodybuilding. Now, you could have put in any words there. Decided to take up stamp collecting, carpentry, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Even different types of keep fit. But bodybuilding amazing. What an amazing shout.
I want to know what physique Paddington was envisaging himself having.
I want to know that too.
Bodybuilding course.
Well, we do get some information on that, mm-hmm. you know. But firstly, I wanted to say this one's got the proper credits on it.
Right.
Which I really enjoy. It's a little easel.
Mm.
And he throws up, you know, he's got his suitcase. Paddington's there with his suitcase. And he throws out a piece of paper onto the easel that says, you know, based on the books by Michael Bond. And then he throws up the name of the director. I don't know if you noticed it.
No, I didn't.
The director's name is Ivor Wood.
Oh, okay. That is...
I just wanted to draw your attention to it because what? I wouldn't want the listeners to not have heard the name Ivor Wood.
No, I don't know why I didn't clock that. That's...
Big, big, big shout out to the name Ivor, which is one of my favourite names because you can keep your Seymour Dix.
Yep.
I am a fan of Ivor Biggin.
Yes.
It's the classic comedy name to me.
Ivor Biggin, Ivor Hardon.
I think everyone's got a favourite.
Yep, definitely.
Comedy name.
Ivor, I think, is one of those names that should come back. You know, they did that thing a few years ago where, and this comes up every couple of years, where they say names are going extinct, like Keith was going extinct for a while.
Yes.
And I think there was also a worry that we weren't going to be any more Garys.
I don't think anyone was worried about it.
Well, I think it was flagged that there weren't going to be
flagged. It's been flagged.
The Garys, because it was a year no one was christened Gary.
Mm.
And then I think, you know, but there's less given to the more unusual names that die out. It's only when they come back into fashion that be there. And I feel Ivor is ripe for return.
Well, I'm happy to see it return because of the comedy potential.
Yeah, definitely.
If you've got a surname that goes with Ivor, you know. I just think, why not? Go for it.
Definitely.
You know, your kid will probably grow up to be a disappointment anyway. Why not saddle them with an extra hurdle? Just build character early. Favourite comedy name?
Ooh. See, now, I do like the simplicity of a huge ass.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
I think, but, you know, I Ivor Biggin is still a classic up there. Alma Holshurt.
That is good.
Yeah,
that is a good one.
Yeah, there's like a sketch series on Saturday Night Live. They did like a run of sketches,
right?
In recent series, where it would be like, there's been an earthquake at the Change Name office, or there's been a gas leak at the Change Name office, and so it would just be a case of, oh, here's people who come along today to change their names. We've now had reports that the following people are safe: Alma Holshurt, Holden Tudix.
Right.
Duncan Dixon Coffee.
Nice. I love a, you know, silly names type mm-hmm. of thing. What's the best, like, not comedy name, actual name you've encountered that somebody had?
Ooh. I'm fairly sure I met a Harry Bush once.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he was having you on.
I think, yeah, I'm sure I've known a few Harrys in my time, and I'm fairly sure one of them was Harry Bush. But I think Harry's a great sort of funny first name if you can get the right surname with it, like Ivor. Harry Hands, that's, I don't know, there's something just funny about that. If I create a character called Harry Hands.
I went to school with a boy called Richard Wood.
Oh.
So he was, in effect, Dick Wood.
Yeah.
Which... makes me happy because I didn't like him very much.
No, fair enough.
He stole my pen.
He stole your pen? Was it a good pen?
Yeah, my granddad bought me a pen and it was yellow and green.
Mm.
And I really loved my pen. And I lost it. Oh, I couldn't find it. And I saw him with it and I was like, that's my pen. And he's like, no, this is mine. And I was like, no, it's not. You stole it. But he was quite scary, so I couldn't do it. I just had to let it go. I just had to let it, except I haven't let it go, have I?
No.
Because that was year six. I was 11 and I'm still holding on to it. If I saw him now, it would be the first thing I mentioned.
Wow. I mean,
I wouldn't see him now. He's probably in prison. I can't. Can I say that? Will we get sued? He won't listen.
No, and you've said probably. You prefaced it with probably, so I think it's fine. You've not made an assertion. You've made a proposal.
A proposal.
Yeah, yeah. You've not.
I'm not saying that he is in prison or is the sort of person who would do something to get in prison, apart from he did steal my pen.
It's
a possibility. I would say it's a possibility for everyone who grew up in my village.
Yeah. I think anyone you haven't seen in 25 years, there's a possibility that they might be in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also true.
Yeah. There you go. There's a possibility.
How old I am? That if I was at school with him when I'm 11, and I haven't seen him in 25 years. Oh, God. Sorry. Just freaking out.
This is the thing. I mean, I know, and I think our listeners know, that you do hold grudges for a long time.
Oh, I hope they do know that.
I mean, I say a long time. It is forever.
Yeah,
it
yeah. Is, yeah.
You never forget.
No.
One day, revenge will be yours, but you never forget.
That's what I always think, is that, you know, one day I'll have the opportunity to you know, slight all my enemies.
So why would you let it go and run the risk that exactly. When you see them, you'd miss that chance. Exactly. That's a chance blown.
Yeah, I don't understand people who let stuff go. I mean, probably they're happier and whatever.
So Paddington.
Yeah, so after the suitcase credits,
yeah,
we get this story going into the keep fit, and he's into bodybuilding now, which is such an unlikely idea. I love that they went to that. Could have been anything.
Well, this is it. I mean, he's a bear. He already has, as a bear, the ability to tear someone's face off. And as we've seen, he can...
I don't think we've seen that.
Well, I think it's just assumed because he's a bear.
No, I don't assume it.
You don't assume that bears naturally... Okay.
Sorry. The assumptions I make about bears are different to the assumptions I make about Paddington. And I think you know that.
Fair enough. In that case, I'll take a leaf out of your book. He probably has the ability to tear someone's face off.
But he doesn't, does he? He's some kind of small, delicate bear.
Well, but he can scare a taxi. He's small, delicate, but he's still enough to terrify a taxi driver.
Okay. I don't think we're going to agree on this.
No. Okay. Well, anyway, he is a bear. He wants to get into bodybuilding. He gets out his special bodybuilding outfit.
Yes.
Which is an incredible sight, because it appears to be a pair of high-waisted floral shorts.
Yes. Again, the choices they were making on this episode, I don't know where they came from. Because if you wanted to suggest that he was becoming a bodybuilder, floral seems to be the last way you'd go.
Yeah, and it's not floral like Bermuda or, you know, anything that's like brightly coloured that you can think, okay, yeah.
No, kind of it's take more on that. Laura Ashley.
It is. It's Laura Ashley floral. It's like white... with some like orange and yellow and sort of pink flowers.
Small flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is a sort of short, so I'm guessing they had problems fitting. I would have liked to have seen him in a unitard.
Wouldn't we all? In a muscle tee with like, you know, with the really low, like Flashdance. Have him dressed up like he's in Flashdance. You know, he's just come from some welding and he's now going to do some bodybuilding.
Right, yeah. We're too early for that.
Yeah, true.
79, I think this is.
Yeah, no leg warmers yet. So
no, yeah. Hadn't been invented. Everybody's legs were so cold when they were working out.
Oh,
freezing cold legs.
That's what people always say about the 70s.
Except for Paddington, who's a bear.
Yes, he's covered in hair.
I do assume him to be covered in hair.
What, you see that he's covered in hair?
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, we've seen him, we've seen him with a duffel coat but no trousers, and then these shorts but no tops. I presume from combining the two images, he is covered in hair. I mean, it'd be weird if he had like a strip that wasn't. That would be very strange.
That would be very strange. Anyway, he signed up to a sort of plan.
Yes.
He has paid £1, mm-hmm. which he thinks is very good value, because he got the costume out of it, these floral shorts, and a sort of, I don't know what you call this exercise equipment. It's three springs that you stretch.
Yeah, between two handles. I think it's like a... I want to say chest expander, but I don't think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
But it's the old school like trope of, you know, someone's going to work out, they have the thing and they pull it apart and stretch it with the resistance, and it's the springs.
Yeah, okay. And so he's got that, and he's taken that out to use that. And he tells us he signed up to all this because of a guy called Grant Stalwart.
Yes. Now that's a good name.
Good name for a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Who has given him a little pamphlet to go with this. So we see really the body that Paddington is trying to achieve, because he wants to look like Grant Stalwart. I think the narrator says Paddington wasn't sure how that would look on a bear or whatever.
He does, but one of the feats that stuck out that Grant Stalwart can do that I think Paddington's aspiring to is being able to crack a walnut between his biceps.
Yes, now that does seem impressive.
Yeah.
Do you think that is impressive, or is that one of those things that,
everyone can do if they try hard enough?
Everyone can do if they try hard enough.
No, I think that's quite impressive. I mean, walnuts are pretty tough.
I'll be honest, I know I couldn't do that, because I'm imagining if you put a walnut anywhere on me, it would just sink into my flesh.
I mean, I'll be honest, I think I would struggle to crack a walnut with a nutcracker.
Really?
I think it would take a couple of attempts. I think possibly that's heightened by my current state, but I think, walnuts are famously pretty tough.
Are they?
Yeah.
I want a walnut now.
You want a walnut?
See if I can crack it in any of my body parts.
Well, I mean, we can do that after we record.
Okay, sure. Well, that's our afternoon activity planned.
Dear, oh dear, this is what you have to do on these stormy weekends when the winds pick up. You've just got to stay inside and try and crack walnuts with body parts.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know the order I'm going to try.
Do you want to enlighten us?
No.
Okay. We'll leave that to the imagination.
Leave it to the imagination, the listeners. I think they know me well enough that they know exactly where I'm going to try.
I think this is a good listener poll. What are the best two body parts to try and crack a walnut between?
No.
Not which ones you should use.
You can't put this out on the internet. What we say here in the podcast, that's like a safe space. Because if you're like 20 minutes deep on a podcast and you're listening to what they're saying, like you've bonded with them, right?
Yeah.
Can't just be having this with casual scrollers seeing they want to put a walnut where?
Yeah, so he's gone out to the garden to work out.
Yeah, with this possibly a chest expander, but we're not sure on the terminology because both of us are repelled by exercise.
Yes, he's not sure what to do with it, though.
No, because he's getting in a bit of a tangle with it, isn't he?
Yeah, so he nails one end of it to the fence.
Obviously.
And then holds the other bit over his head and walks as far as possible.
Yeah, it can't go well.
No, it's. I mean, one thing that's a thin paper fence. He's nailed that to.
Yes.
So, which unsurprisingly breaks, goes flying over his head, and we're introduced to a new character,
the neighbour.
Yes, and I didn't remember the neighbour at all.
No.
Mr. Curry.
It is Mr. Curry.
And he's a miserable git.
Yes.
Arguably, because he's got to live next door to a bear.
I think a miserable neighbour is a trope that you get very, very often. And I think it's an excellent device to have a neighbour who's always going, "Oh, what are they up to over there?"
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think it's always good to have a reliable antagonist that's never like, "I must get that bear and capture him," but more, bloody kids.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Paddington, but then you were talking before about Paddington's savagery. And he gets proper savage with Mr. Curry.
Well, this again is where you're meant to be on Paddington's side, I think, and think that Mr. Curry is a miserable old man, but Paddington really goes in on him here.
He does. I mean, I'll put it out there, still on Paddington's side, even though he goes in on him.
Oh, yeah.
Because Paddington says to him, this plan will take you from a 7-stone weakling to, it's supposed to take you from that to like a really powerful person. It could change you, Mr. Curry, from a 7-stone weakling to an 8-stone weakling.
Which it's funny, but it must actually appeal to Mr. Curry because he decides to take him up on it.
Yeah.
Now, something that we find out is that this plan is cost £20.
Yes.
That's what Paddington tells Mr. Curry, it costs £20, and that you get all this stuff, and then that's when you use it every day, you can, turn from a 7-stone weakling into a very strong person, whatever. So Mr. Curry says, well, just hand over all that stuff. Oh, and Grant Stalwart gives you a guarantee.
Mm.
So Mr. Curry says, hand over all that stuff. I'm going to write to Grant Stalwart and tell him that this is, you know, we want our money back and that this is all ridiculous. So I'm not sure if he's scamming Paddington.
I think he's scamming Paddington because the fence is broken. He said, basically, you know, you've got to pay for the fence. And then he's thinking, yeah, because his eyes light up and he's thinking, ah, well, I'll return this stuff and claim Paddington's £20.
Yes.
Because he doesn't know Paddington's only paid a pound. And this confused me because, like, well, he said it was a pound.
Yes, but it's like an instalment thing.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing I thought initially my thought was, well, Paddington is scamming Mr. Curry.
Yes.
By saying, oh, this is worth £20. Take this for your trouble.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, he gets back inside and it turns out, as he tells Mrs. Brown, Mrs. Brown says, you've only paid a £1 deposit. You've still got £19 to pay. And Paddington's like, oh, no, how am I going to find another £19?
But he signed it all over to Mr. Curry. So if anybody's got to pay £19, it's him.
Exactly. And this is what the family are. And when they go, well, Paddington's still out a pound. I don't think he should be. And that's our fence anyway.
Yeah.
So this Curry's a bloody crook.
Mr. Brown's on Paddington's side, though. He says he's a mean old so-and-so next door.
Yeah.
I also picked up that they said that Paddington did something disconsolately, which is one of those words I think I've read it more often than heard it. It's got too many syllables. I can't even say it convincingly.
Disconsolately.
Disconsolately. I can't even say it, but it just struck me you wouldn't put that in a kid's show now, would you?
No, you wouldn't. You absolutely wouldn't.
It's really fallen out of favour, that word.
It's like Ivor. Ivor disconsolately.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, him and Harry Hands go, this, they could solve mysteries.
Well,
Harry Hands and Ivor disconsolately.
You can't even say it. It's a terrible word. It's too many. Too many syllables.
What sort of mysteries would they solve? Confusing ones. Mrs. Bird, the housekeeper, is introduced here as well. So this again, I think, dates it when the Browns have a housekeeper who's there cooking meals for them and everything else.
Yeah. Everything's so... I don't think I realised how important class was in Britain. Like, it still is. And people say it all the time. But then you go back, and this is presented as like an ordinary family. And then at some point, they've got a housekeeper. And you go, oh, hang on a minute. These are all poshos.
Yes.
What am I watching here?
All sitting around the table for a cup of tea and Mrs. Bird serving them up stuff there while they discuss Paddington's exercise regime.
I can absolutely guarantee no one I've ever been related to has had a housekeeper.
No, but I think if you've got the money to be giving your bear money to spend on exercise regimes, you can afford a housekeeper.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Well, you know, that is the marker of being middle class, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is if we had a bear, would we be able to fund his hobbies?
Definitely, definitely. That should be the barometer.
What do you think marks people out in class wise?
Well, I don't know, because I always think, you know, it used to be people said, oh, if you had a cafetiere,
yeah,
you were middle class. That's a very middle class thing to have as a cafetiere.
Now I think it's Le Creuset.
Yeah, I think it is a bit Le Creuset, maybe like an espresso.
I think if you've got Le Creuset, then you're probably middle class.
Mm.
If you don't even know what it is, you're definitely working class.
Yeah.
Or
so upper or class a man that you don't even bother cooking.
Yeah. Do you know what else I think it is? Skiing. I reckon if you go skiing all the time, every year, you know all the best whatevers they are, you're upper class, right? Yeah. If you've been skiing like maybe a couple of times or if you know people that ski very regularly, you're probably middle class. If you have never been skiing and if you told someone that you knew that you were going skiing, they would say, really? You want to go somewhere hot, don't you? You're working class.
See, now I don't know if I agree with that because I think like your Lidl and your Aldi do deals on ski wear almost every year. They do like ski suits, especially for children.
And you don't think that middle class people shop in Lidl and Aldi?
Oh, they absolutely do. Remember when we lived in Sevenoaks and they opened a Lidl?
They went mad for it.
They were going
they were
in
tearing
with
the place down
with their Waitrose bags.
Yeah, yeah.
To get all their Lidl groceries and then take them around. That's yeah. But yeah, I think choice of holiday is a good shout. I think the one that always gets me is the you could, if you're talking about things that like breaking down class boundaries, it's the cheeky Vimto.
What do you mean?
Right, you have WKD, right, which is arguably quite a low class drink.
I would love to hear somebody argue that it isn't.
Okay. And port, which, as we've discussed before, I think is quite a high class drink.
Okay.
Right, I think it is, I think, right? How those two came combined.
Is that what a cheeky Vimto is?
Yeah, it's a WKD and port.
I don't think I thought that was what a cheeky Vimto was.
That's what a cheeky Vimto is WKD and port.
I thought it was like, I thought it was something different. This, okay, well, I think I've passed the not being upper class test.
Yeah.
Because I think I thought the ingredients were vodka and not Benylin.
Cowpole?
No. Cheeky Vimto, what did I think it was? Like blackcurrant, like Ribena.
Vodka and Ribena. That's just vodka. That's not a cocktail at all. Vodka and Ribena.
It's not.
That's Turbo Ribena. That's what that is.
It's not cheeky, is it?
That's not cheeky. No, that's just outright. No one, because if someone came up to it, oh, fancy a cheeky vodka and Ribena, I'd be like, you got some problems. Right.
I would try it.
I mean, I would try. Well, yeah, because the thing is, vodka doesn't taste of anything. You know, certainly not when
people say that, but then if you give me a Coke with vodka in it and a Coke without, then I know the difference.
Yeah. Well, it tastes of alcohol. It doesn't have like a taste beyond that. Like,
okay.
You know, like gin has that sort of botanical flavour and like, you know,
I see what you're saying.
Because it's just the grain spirit. It's just alcohol flavour. But yeah, I think I would try vodka Ribena, but I think it would be more common knowledge if that was a cheeky Vimto. I think most people would say, you can't call that a cocktail.
100% I didn't know that there was port in a cheeky Vimto, though.
Yeah.
I definitely thought it was something different. Definitely thought it was something different.
It's WKD Blue and port.
No. That, God almighty, shy.
Well, yeah.
Who would drink that?
Well, exactly. Exactly. How did that come about? How was that invented?
When worlds collide.
Yeah.
Mm.
It reminds me of my last lot of student digs in the first place we lived together.
Oh, the hellhole.
The hellhole, yeah. We had, it'd been a student house for about 30 years and it was just full of crap. And the garage we cleared out and turned into a bar. And as we were clearing it out, we found all these bottles of various spirits that had been picked up on people's holidays. But they were, most of them were missing labels, or the labels were in languages we didn't understand. So whenever we had a party, we just mix them together randomly and go, well, that doesn't taste like paint thinner, so that'll do. As you do when you're a student. But I think even in that, I don't think any of us ever would have thought, let's take this and add a WKD blue. Or let's take this WKD and add some port. I want to know who invented it. It feels like it should be common knowledge who invented it.
I think it's one of those things that can only be invented by necessity. It's one of those things that can only be, we have drunk everything else in this house. These are our only two ingredients. Shall we put them together and create a brave new world in which we have tried port and WKD blue? And then you do it and it's surprisingly quite good.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the most likely culprit. But I feel like someone somewhere should be able to claim ownership.
I'm sure somebody will claim ownership. It's Fat Larry or something, isn't it?
Fat Larry?
Isn't there a character?
Fat Larry?
Might not be his name.
Amazing.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Is there a Vimto man?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
the line drawing.
Maybe there used to be a Vimto man, because I'm stuck in my head is the 7-Up guy.
Yeah,
Fido Dido.
But like him, but if he got fat, that's why I called him Fat Larry.
Oh right, okay.
I don't think anything I'm saying is true. I think I'm putting together several facts of which I'm unsure.
I mean, maybe if there's, I tell you what, if there isn't a Fat Larry, he should definitely team up with Harry Hands and Ivor Disconsolately. You know, they can be the unrecognisables. Are you looking up Fat Larry now?
I'm just going to Google Fat Larry just in case.
All right.
I've got the name right. Oh, Purple Ronnie.
Purple Ronnie. Right.
Purple Ronnie. I wasn't close.
Because he evolved, didn't he, from being the Vimto spokesman to being like a character in his own right of like rude birthday cards and things.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You do know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I just didn't. I didn't connect Fat Larry with Purple Ronnie.
Oh, but when I said Vimto man, nothing happened in your brain.
No, I said I like had an image of Fido Dido trying to shake.
Whatever, but... whatever. Purple Ronnie.
Yes, I used to get. There was a phase when everyone got Purple Ronnie cards and things, and he always talked about bottom burps.
Yeah, I really genuinely never liked it. But maybe the purple thing is why I thought of Ribena.
Maybe.
I never liked Purple Ronnie, but it was big for a little while, wasn't it?
It was very big for a little while. And I'm sure there was definitely the Vimto mashup with Purple Ronnie.
Purple Ronnie's Little Guide to Doing It.
Yeah, I think someone gave me that, like as a school friend gave me that as like a gag birthday gift.
A birthday poem for the booze monster by Purple Ronnie. Some people just drink one shandy before they fall flat on the floor, but you'll glug down 8 pints of lager and still be shouting for more. Purple Ronnie's Little Book of Willies and Bottoms. Yes, this was a whole thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's one of those things that when you look back on it, you just wonder... Why?
What happened as a society?
That we evolved the need for Purple Ronnie.
Yeah, and a little book of willies and bottoms.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, back to Paddington.
Oh, yes. So we've gone totally the wrong era.
We have.
The world of Paddington could never sustain a Purple Ronnie.
No, or a cheeky
When Vimto. You think of... He's all the line drawings of Purple Ronnie... That is so different to this world of line drawings of people that Paddington is interacting with.
Mm.
And the rudeness of Purple Ronnie with his bottoms and willies and farts and whatever is totally different to the rudeness of a world in which Paddington gets messy buns.
Yes, and finds himself a bit sticky.
He gets all sticky from his messy buns.
Yes. I mean, I think...
And he ends this episode... Oh, sorry, what do you think?
I think that's the thing. This we're looking at not necessarily a gentler time because he is a bit savage, this bear, but more. I think there's more subtlety to him.
Subtlety,
yeah, a bit more subtlety. But in this, Mr. Brown says Paddington should get his pound back that he spent, and
are you making that into a euphemism?
No.
Okay. Sorry.
No, he should get the pound that he spent on the thing back.
Right.
And Paddington says, I may even buy some nutcrackers.
Yes.
But then comes out with an immortal line at the end. Do you want to give us the immortal line?
Oh, I do. Absolutely. It was my favourite part. He says he's going to get some nutcrackers because I don't think my muscles will be big enough to manage your Christmas walnuts. Do, 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 do.
Christmas Walnuts, an excellent comedy name.
I just think they knew what they were doing with that.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. That it's funny. And the bear turns to look at you like... Even though he doesn't do different expressions, when he stares directly at you, you know that he knows that you know.
Yeah, that's
he
it.
He knows that you know.
That's it. More innuendo. That, I feel, is what's missing.
Well, not from this show. We love a bit of it.
Yeah. But I feel like, you know, I think this is the thing. It's the innuendo generally. I feel like, you know, that kind of very subtle innuendo I think is a bit missing nowadays. Like, you'll get people doing innuendo and then they'll go like, afterwards. So it's like, well, we all know it's an innuendo. You don't necessarily need to do the whole, hey, afterwards. Just let it sit there. Let it sit. Let it percolate in the cafetiere of televisual conversation.
Right.
And then just pour out your gentle innuendo.
I don't know what you're trying to do with this.
I don't know either. No idea. Anyway, that was Paddington. Liz, how do you like me now?
I really liked it. It is very, very gentle, but it's just so well done. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
I think, and I don't necessarily, I don't know what you think. I don't know whether a kid today would really enjoy it because it is quite slow and gentle paced and that sort of thing.
Well, see, I don't know. I don't know if I agree because I think they're only 5-minute episodes. They do, we don't have any lull. They do kind of still rattle on. It's a very tight story in that 5 minutes.
Yeah.
There's no sort of long pauses where we have to see him like doddering about in the garden, wandering back and forth. It is very tight. And I think it's the kind of thing you could easily show to kids now and they would get, I'd love how as well we do this. Normally I do this. Every episode talked about this like I'm an authority on children.
Well, I was just about to say, because I think you are really overestimating a kid's attention span, because now they are bombarded with like information and every show they will have watched has like very clear, you know, things, and they don't have just an old man narrating. They have full cars and whatever. We speculate without ever having tested this on a child. If you've got a child that you'd like us to test things on, no. We really have no clue and no authority, and we should just stop trying to decide.
All right. Well, on that note then, Liz, thank you for joining.
That's me saying we shouldn't do the podcast. We have no authority here.
Well, no authority on children, but I think we've decided that Paddington, we're fully on board with.
And you know what else we're fully on board with?
Yep.
The 100th episode.
Yes.
Plans are coming together.
They are.
Do not forget that this is happening. It's a big deal. It is a big deal.
Thank you everyone so far who sent us memories of Art Attack. If you haven't yet, if you've got some more of something else popped into your head, please get in touch on social media. Tell us what
really
you thought.
Really do, because we want as many as possible.
Absolutely. We will be back next time with another episode. Until then, Liz, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to rate, like, subscribe. We're going to go off and drink some vodka and Ribena.